Here's 78 on 78, News Radio 78, WBBM, Chicago.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall, inviting you to share another adventure in the macabre. All great writers, at one time or another, have written a mystery story. The unknown and the unexplained are intriguing. Their worlds limitless. We are more aware of that now because of ESP and psychokinesis. The effect of thought on material objects lends credence to many an old wives' tale. Henry James anticipated one of them in 1892 in his story, Sir Edmund Orme. Our adaptation of this classic begins in Boston, but it was in a church on Martha's Vineyard that Mrs. Marsden first spoke openly to David Delano.
You saw him?
Yes, Mrs. Marsden. He came into the pew and sat next to Charlotte. And then he walked to the center aisle of the church and walked away from the pulpit and out. Odd, no one else paid him any attention.
Because no one else could see him, Mr. Delano.
I beg your pardon.
But you'll see him again. Because you're in love with my daughter.
Our mystery drama, Edmund Orme, was adapted especially for the Mystery Theater by Roy Windsor and stars Lamont Johnson. It is sponsored in part by ARM, Allergy Relief Medicine, and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The Electra's all washed and loaded, and you're on your way. You figured 300 miles the first day, but with all of Electra's luxury and room, you're out 400 miles before you know it. Not only that, but the EPA mileage estimates are 22 highway, 15 city, and 18 combined. That's with the standard 5.7-liter engine and automatic transmission. Of course, your mileage will vary depending on how and where you drive, your car's condition, and how it's equipped. And EPA estimates are lower in California. But it's nice to know that a car with as much prestige and elegance as Electra can also be efficient. Buick Electra, a car that can actually make you look forward to a long trip. Electra models are equipped with GM-built engines supplied by various divisions. See your dealer for details. It takes a lot more today to test products for safety than it did when we began way back in 1894. It takes researchers to determine safety requirements by questioning how and by whom the product will be used and perhaps misused. It also takes engineers to evaluate product designs to determine if they present a potential hazard. And it takes inspectors to monitor manufacturing of products that our engineering departments investigated and accepted as reasonably safe in design. Yes, today we serve America by diminishing the risk of probable hazards arising from the use of electrical products, fire and burglary protection equipment, building materials, and marine products. We're Underwriters Laboratories, and our UL and a circle label on a product means the product design complies with a nationally recognized safety standard. Persons, they are intelligent and sound of mind, believe that a guilty past pursues a person until the offense has been exorcised. This is a deeper problem than conscience can solve. You may regret something, and you may make amends for it, and then perhaps your conscience is clear. But what if you have done something unforgivable?
What if the person you have harmed is dead? Is it in his power to make you suffer because you can never make amends? It was a warm Sunday afternoon in mid-October in 1890. Most of the strollers had left the Boston Common to go home for tea when Mrs. Marsden said,
"Really, Charlotte, I'm all right. A bit tired, nothing more."
"But, Mother, you have that pale look."
"Walk on with Mr. Clement. Mr. Delano will sit with me on the bench. We'll follow shortly. You don't mind, Mr. Delano?"
"Certainly not."
"You won't be long, Mother."
"5 minutes, no more."
"All right. Do watch over Mother, Mr. Delano."
"You and Charlotte have an unusually close relationship, Mrs. Marsden."
"Oh, I'm devoted to her, of course."
"And she is vain about your appearance. I would be, too. You're a beautiful woman."
"Oh, thank you."
"An unusual young lady."
"We are both a little strange."
"Have you recovered?"
"Oh, yes. Yeah, yes, it's left me. The fluttering."
"Heart?"
"Oh, no."
"Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Well, Charlotte has set the young men of Boston on their ears."
"Are you in one of the professions, Mr. Dunlop?"
"No, I'm a shipping broker. My friend John Clement is an attorney. Will you stay in Boston through the fall, Mrs. Marsden?"
"Oh, for a few weeks more, perhaps, with a side trip to Martha's Vineyard. Our friends, the Tompkins, have asked us for a weekend before we return home to Providence."
"Of course, you'll stay for the Elliott's ball."
"Oh, Charlotte is looking forward to it."
"Oh, it's a grand occasion. You and Charlotte will make it something special. May I call on you in Providence sometime?"
"If business brings you our way, of course. I'll be pleased to see you again."
"And Charlotte?"
"Of course. But you'd know that better than I, Mr. Delano."
I really don't. She's a bit of a coquette, you know."
"Don't say that, please. I don't like the word, Mr. Delano. It's cheapening."
"Oh, I didn't mean it in a disparaging way. Forgive me, please."
"Granted. As you must know, a coquette deliberately attracts men, but without affection. And that's why they're always punished."
"Punished? May I ask how you know that, Mrs. Marsden?"
I was a bad girl myself."
"And you were punished?"
"I carry it through life."
"You are badly infected, David, my friend. You love Charlotte, of course. Or is it the mother who is attracted to you?"
"No, but... I must say that for a woman in her 50s, Mrs. Marsden is remarkably attractive."
"She favors you, David. You're a lucky man."
"I'm not so sure."
"I'd be. They're rich, Mrs. Marsden's a widow, and Charlotte is her only child. Hardly a child at 22 or so. Boston society's beautiful darling."
"She is beautiful, isn't she?"
"Strikingly so. Almost a copy of her mother."
"Except for Charlotte's eyes. Cornflower blue and sparkling."
"Well, what's the next step, David? Have you asked Mrs. Marsden for her daughter's hand?"
"No, I've been on the verge of speaking to her, but I've held back. There's something strange about them, mysterious. Mrs. Marsden said as much herself, and I have no way of knowing how Charlotte feels toward me."
"Ask her."
"I almost did, day before yesterday. The butler admitted me to tea. In the distance, someone was playing the piano." "Good afternoon, Charlotte."
"Good afternoon. Mother will be in directly. Please sit down. Will you have tea?"
"Well, I'll wait for your mother. She is an accomplished pianist."
"Yes, Mother plays well. After one of her so-called flutters, music transports her."
"Well, that was last Sunday."
"You were very kind to sit with her, David. Thank you for your attention."
"My affection for both of you is genuine and deep, if I may say so."
"You have."
"What are these flutters, do you know?"
"Oh, they're not physically caused. Mother's in good health.
Then how do you explain them?
I can't, and Mother won't talk about them. She has one every so often and turns pale and her eyes cloud over. Then it's gone. Sometimes it's months between them.
May I say what must be obvious to you, Charlotte?
I'd rather you didn't.
Well, perhaps it is presumptuous,
but... Hello, Mr. Delano. How very nice that you could stop by.
Thank you for the invitation.
Shall I pour, Mother?
Yes, if you please. Oh, do sit down, Mr. Delano. Such a civilized custom, afternoon tea and cakes. Well, have you been having a good visit?
Very. And I enjoyed listening to you play the piano.
It gives me a great deal of pleasure. I should be lost without music.
May I serve you, Mrs. Marsden?
Oh, not quite yet, thank you.
May I ask when you're leaving for the vineyard?
This weekend, isn't it, Mother?
Ah, we'll miss you.
Do you know the vineyard, Mr. Delano?
Quite well. Yes, John Clement's parents have a home there. I have been their guest on occasions.
Wouldn't it be jolly if Mr. Clements and you...
Mother.
Perhaps you're right, Charlotte.
Well, it's a good idea all the same, unless it would offend you, Miss Marsden.
Certainly not. What you do is hardly my concern. And Mr. Clements is amusing. Now, Mother, will you have the tea?
If you please.
Oh, let me serve you, Mrs. Marsden.
Thank you.
There you are.
Mother, dear, what in the world is the matter with you?
You really should have a steadier hand, Mr. Delano.
Oh, let me pick up the pieces.
Your gown is ruined, Mother. I'll ring for Stevens.
And so you never had a chance to pop the question?
At the moment I was about to, Mrs. Marsden entered the room, and then there was the matter of the dropped teacup.
An accident.
I can't explain it. I have a very steady hand. I offered cup and saucer to Mrs. Marsden. She took it and let it go.
What distracted her?
Nothing. She simply dropped it, and she didn't move.
Even with hot tea splashed on her dress?
She didn't move. Her face was ashen. Her eyes were glazed over. She had the same look as she had last Sunday when she asked me to sit with her on the bench. Do you remember?
How strange. Is Mrs. Marsden all right in the head?
Maybe not. There is something else about that tea incident that I forgot to mention.
Oh?
After Mrs. Marsden said I should have a steadier hand, there was a look in her eyes, a deep beneath that glazed, staring look, that seemed to say, make believe it was you who dropped the cup. Make believe it was you.
Holds Indian summer, clean ocean air. Ah, beautiful indeed. We should have a grand weekend with the Tompkins.
I look forward to seeing some of my Providence friends.
No regrets about what you may be leaving behind.
We're returning to Boston, aren't we?
For another week. Then we go home.
After the Elliott's ball.
Are you looking forward to it, Charlotte?
Oh, yes. I've heard it's a grand affair.
David Delano is in love with you, my dear. Do you return that love? You were rude to him at tea, you know.
I'll apologize.
Please do.
You and I are very compatible, Mother. But, well, I don't like to be pushed.
I'm not pushing him at you. It is your happiness that I want to protect. Do you love David Delano?
I don't know.
You must know.
Why do you speak so harshly?
Because you must know that you do or do not love him. You have to know. If you have any doubt, reject him. If you don't, it may be too late.
I don't understand you.
He will become so possessed of his love for you that he will never let it go.
But, Mother, that would hardly be my concern.
You're mistaken. He would haunt you the rest of the days of your life.
Mother.
I'm telling you because... I know.
Well, Mrs. Marsden.
Oh, what a pleasant surprise. So you took my suggestion.
I agreed to it after John Clements insisted on a last visit to the vineyard. And, of course, he's encouraged because Charlotte finds him amusing.
He is a fine young man, but Charlotte's affections lie elsewhere.
If they do, I'm unaware of it.
You'll see. I know.
Has she said as much?
No. But I know.
May I ask how you know?
First, forgive me for blaming you for dropping the teacup. I dropped it, as you know. For a moment, I lost control of myself.
That does not happen infrequently, does it, Mrs. Marston? I'm referring to those nasty flutters of yours.
Oh, they're real enough. At any rate, I was rude to you, but sometime I think you'll understand and make allowances for me.
You grow more and more mysterious.
I have a deep presentiment about you, Mr. Delano. I don't want you to become nervous.
All I'm nervous about is Charlotte's feelings toward me.
Oh, that will come clear. I have seen its manifestation.
I beg your pardon?
There is a mystic initiation in store for you, Mr. Delano.
And what in the world might that be?
When it happens, do not become extravagantly nervous. Charlotte must never know.
Know what?
A horror that you and I alone will share.
And there, briefly, we leave David Delano aboard the ferry for Martha's Vineyard, trying his best to make heads or tails out of Mrs. Marsden's strange remarks. Everyone has presentiments, I'm sure, and usually they can be explained away as natural worry. Will you have a safe trip? Will a junior automobile driver drive with caution? That kind of thing. But manifestation means something seen. And what is mystic initiation? We'll learn more when I return with Act Two.
Help!
It's hay fever.
Help! I did it.
And the whole world seems like one big pollen farm. Don't give up. Arm yourself with ARM, allergy relief medicine. ARM gives you full antihistamine relief for dripping and sneezing, plus congestion relief for freer breathing, clearer sinuses. Antihistamine relief plus congestion relief equals ARM.
Don't give up. Arm yourself with ARM.
Take when needed, only as directed.
Where do you go for the good times? You sure don't have to go far. Just put your hand in Nabisco, America's cookie jar.
Nabisco has a cookie for everyone in America's cookie jar, like creamy, dreamy Oreo cookies and yummy Chips Ahoy cookies with real chocolate chips.
Just put your hand in Nabisco, America's cookie jar.
It's about time, Chicago. About 12 times a day to New Orleans, to Houston 9 times a day, and to St. Louis 12 times a day. I'm talking about the number of times a day Delta jets take off to these cities. You know, Delta has the most nonstops to New Orleans, 5 a day, including a 9 p.m. night coach. To Houston, Delta has 4 daily nonstops, with the only wide ride TriStar going. And when it comes to St. Louis, let's see someone top Delta's 9 nonstops from O'Hare and 3 from Midway. What's more, you can save on Delta Super Saver fares with some restrictions. Night coach as low as $96 round trip to New Orleans, $103 round trip to Houston, $45 round trip to St. Louis. So Chicago, it's about time. About time you call Delta or your travel agent. Delta is ready when you are.
The Mystery Tale is a famous story written by Henry James, a great novelist, known for his realistic psychological penetration and analysis. It is evident that James was interested in penetrating the unusual characters of a mother and daughter, both beautiful. proud and protective of each other. Behind their striking appearance lies the mystery which we are unraveling. We're in Martha's Vineyard. It is night, and John Clements and David Delano are standing on the boat wharf.
I tell you, David, Mrs. Marsden's a bit off her rocker. She must be.
I thought so, too, but except for this preoccupation of hers, she is sane and intelligent. She's well-educated and, from what I've been able to learn, highly respected.
That's beyond me. She said that she and you would alone share a horror. What do you do? Wait for some horror to present itself?
I don't take it seriously, but it worries me for Charlotte's sake. She doesn't know about it, and she's not to. You understand?
Of course. Oh, she loves you, David. She's afraid of you.
Afraid? Oh, how can she be?
Afraid of her own feelings. She's had many attachments, I'm sure, but I think her feelings for you are much deeper.
Have I given up? I wish I were back in Boston.
Don't despair. And don't forget the party tomorrow night at the Tompkins. Church in the morning. Everyone will attend. We'll walk on the beach, take a sail if you'd care to, and then we'll go to the party.
I have no appetite for that, John. The party, I mean.
Use the occasion to state your position. Speak to the perverse Miss Charlotte. Find out where you stand.
And if she says no?
Bow, say thank you, and goodbye. Then back to Boston we go. You're free. And you'll be free from that horror you're supposed to share with Mrs. Marsden. Nonsense, of course.
I wonder if there is something to what Mrs. Marsden said.
Oh, David.
May I share a seat in this pew?
Certainly. I got separated from Mother, who went on ahead with Mr. and Mrs. Tompkins and some of the other house guests. Where's John?
He met an acquaintance. He's sitting with him. You don't mind my sitting here, do you?
Of course not. I haven't seen you since we arrived.
I haven't wanted to intrude.
But John knows the Tompkins.
All the same, I don't like to be dragged along like somebody just washed ashore.
What a peculiar thing to say.
Is it? My presence seems to make you uncomfortable.
I want to apologize for being rude last week at tea. I didn't mean that what you do does not concern me.
That makes me feel better.
You are a friend, David. And I take an interest in my friends.
I'm overwhelmed with such warmth.
Here's a prayer book, if that's what you're looking for.
Oh, thank you. I'll hand it to him. I'll share yours.
What?
Hand him the prayer book.
Him? What are you talking about?
Oh, my God.
You saw him, David?
Distinctly, Mrs. Marsden, but I don't know what I saw. He sat down next to Charlotte in the pew, and I asked her to offer him my prayer book. She looked as if she thought I was crazy.
You saw him all the time?
Yes. And when I looked around, Charlotte saw you standing up and said something's happened to Mother. You wore the same expression I saw when you had time to sit on the bench in the common and again just before you dropped the teacup.
Now you know.
I know nothing. What I saw was a handsome young gentleman, his hands crossed and his cane, dressed in fine old-fashioned clothes. I was surprised when he left the pew.
No one else saw him.
What? Oh, but he was as plain as day.
To you and to me. Not to anyone else. To them, he was invisible. You must not tell anyone.
Is this the horror that you said you and I would share?
Yes. You're the only person in the world who could see him.
And you, Mrs. Marsden? Oh,
me, of course.
What does it mean?
It's my curse.
Charlotte's the life of the party.
I should have known. This is not the place or the time to declare myself.
She'll quiet down.
With all those young men dancing attendance, I think not. If it won't offend you, John, I think I'll slip out and walk by the shore.
As you please, but I think you're making a mistake. Oh, good evening, Mrs. Marsden.
Good evening. May I speak with you alone, Mr. Delano?
Excuse me, David. Think over what I said.
Yes, Mrs. Marsden.
May I ask you a question?
If I may ask you one.
Oh, we'll have to come to that, I suppose.
We will. For a reason that isn't even vaguely clear to me, Mrs. Marsden, I've been caught up in a series of incidents which I find puzzling and disturbing. Why me? And who was the phantom? I have no better word to describe him. He is invisible to everyone except you and me.
May I ask my question?
What is it?
Are you in love with my daughter?
Almost everyone is, Mrs. Marsden.
No, please don't be flippant. I know the answer, of course.
Well, then why ask the question? But how you can know escapes me. Am I transparent?
You saw him?
Ah, the gentleman in the pew in the church.
Did you feel it was inevitable that you should see him?
You use extreme words.
I knew you'd see him as soon as you should really be in love with Charlotte.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It was a test.
A test?
You'll see him again.
I have no objection, but I shall take more interest in him if you tell me who he is.
I'll tell you if you'll tell me what you said to Charlotte in church.
I said nothing that was the least out of the way.
Are you very sure?
I don't know what made me keep quiet.
Well, that was quite enough for him. It isn't what you say that makes the difference. It's what you feel. That's what he goes by.
And who is this mysterious he? You must tell me.
His name is Edmund Orme.
I never heard of him.
And it is unlikely that you should have. He was dead before you were born.
Mother?
He's by her side. By Charlotte's side.
Don't look at him. Don't notice him. Never.
What plot are the two of you hatching?
I've been asking your mother for your hand.
Oh, indeed. And has she given it?
She was just going to when you appeared.
Do you like Mr. Delano, Charlotte?
It's difficult to say before him, isn't it?
Why are you staring at us?
What on earth is the matter with you? You've both such odd expressions on your faces. One would think you'd seen a ghost.
Go tell the others I'll be along soon.
And you, are you coming? Mr. Delano. I'll be waiting inside, Mother.
I feel faint. Now, you know my life.
This is a dream. Or a grotesque joke. The man sat next to her in church, and when she walked over to us just now, he was at her side. And she didn't see him. Who is Edmund Orme?
A man I wronged long ago.
He's very young.
He was born before I was.
And he's dead. He appears in order to punish you, Mrs. Marsden.
Oh, I'm beyond that. No, he's intent upon my daughter.
The sins of the mother? Is that it? Please, I want to understand.
How can you when I myself don't really understand?
What harm can he do? No physical harm, surely.
He absorbs my attention and reminds me of a past I cannot escape. My senses become numbed. I appear to others as distracted or unbalanced. It is a life of torture.
And because I love Charlotte, I now share the presence of Edmund Orme.
Yes.
I still don't really understand any of this, Mrs. Marsden.
You love Charlotte. Edmund Orme appears to me in Charlotte's presence to punish me for the past. He appears to you as a warning.
A warning of what?
the fate that befell him and which might befall you?
I'd hardly call you a sparkling guest, David. You've been out here a good part of the time. The party's breaking up.
I'm sorry, John.
You're a picture of despondency. As your co-conspirator, can you tell me what Mrs. Marsden said that has so depressed you?
I will later.
I'll go say my goodnights. Follow along. Don't stay out here too much longer.
Good night, John.
Good night, Charlotte. See you on the ferry tomorrow.
Oh, now, where did I leave my shawl? Caesar's ghost. Oh, I thought you'd left, David. John said you might be on the beach.
I was about to go when your mother came over to me and we got to talking. Sit down, Charlotte.
Have you seen my shawl? I left...
We'll worry about that after you've heard what I have to say to you.
My, this is a different David Delano. An imperial, arbitrary one. Can I guess what you have to say?
Your mother offered me your hand.
So you said.
You know how I feel, but... Well, it would be unforgivable to approach you without your mother's permission.
That's old-fashioned, David.
Perhaps it is, but it's also good manners.
Women are not chattels. They may have been once, but not in this age. My mother gave my hand to you. Did your mother give yours to me?
She would, if that were custom. I love you, Charlotte. Will you be...
What on earth is the matter with you? Why are you staring over my shoulder? Have you gone mad?
Oh, my dear Charlotte.
That's twice now that you look as if you've seen a ghost. And there was your strange behavior in church when you asked me to pass a prayer book to an empty space. You'll excuse me, David.
Charlotte, I can't explain.
Even if you could, I'd not be interested. My hand is my own to give, and I won't give it to you. The fact is, I don't want to see you ever again.
You don't understand.
Tell him to leave. He's mad. David. David, what happened?
He appeared. I had determined to speak to Charlotte and ask her to be my wife. Before I could say the words, he materialized behind her. I was startled.
You didn't explain what you'd seen.
No, but... This is horrible. You wronged Edmund Orme. I didn't. I don't even know who he is. Why should he interfere with my happiness?
You don't see?
If you will excuse me, madam, I'm damned if I do. Why should I be made miserable, more miserable than I am?
I don't know. I can only surmise. Your love for Charlotte is genuine.
It's futile.
Edmund Orme is protecting you.
Is he indeed? From what?
Deceptive love.
What in heaven's name does that mean?
He was deceived.
By you?
Yes. I killed him.
There is considerable evidence, a lot of it recent, that puzzles the so-called pure scientists who heretofore have dismissed the occult with a smile of disbelief. Writers have always been intrigued by the possibility that there is truth in everything, from legend to healing by the laying on of hands. The evidence is there. What we are listening to, then, may be very real. Consider that when I return shortly with Act 3.
This is WBBM Chicago.
Spring is springing up all across the land. And the flowers are blooming. And Avon's sunny smiles come shining. It's a time for beauty. And Avon's smile, I love to be.
Give your Avon representative any old worn-out lipstick, you'll get a new full-size Avon lipstick for just 35 cents. It's a $2.25 value. We're out to put Avon on everybody's lip.
You give me lip with smiles so far and so many shades so fresh, so young, and you give me spring in style. Oh, Avon, you make me
limited time offer. Your Avon representative has details.
It's Northwest. West Federal Savings Time, 63 hours a week.
Hi, I'm Chuck Shaden, Vice President here at Northwest Federal Savings. Let's find out firsthand why people like Northwest Federal.
I like the different conveniences they have. You can get traveler's checks. Anything you want to do, you can do it if you've got the Northwest card.
I like the fast, courteous service and the fact that I don't have to fill out a lot of paperwork before I can come to the counter.
The hours, more hours than other banks. In fact, I switched to them from another bank because of their convenience, their hours, everything.
No bank does for people what this bank does, really.
And the people here are marvelous for service and cordiality. Just plain swell folks.
Well, if you don't feel that way about your bank, it's time to sing a different tune.
It's Northwest Federal Savings Time, 63 hours a week.
Become involved with a specter, a visible disembodied spirit who appears only to Mrs. Ann Marsden and young David Delano. Henry James spun the story before the turn of the century, not only to entertain, but to make a point. The point remains obscure to Mr. Delano. All he knows is that the specter of Edmund Orme continues to stand between him and his love for Mrs. Marsden's daughter. Mrs. Marsden suspects the point. She is being punished through her innocent daughter. It is after breakfast in John Clement's house on Martha's Vineyard.
Could it have been an hallucination?
Call it what you will, John.
You've had an extraordinary experience.
You do believe what I've told you?
Oh, yes. I'd like to disbelieve all of it.
So should I.
This Edmund Orme appears only to Mrs. Marsden and to you when Charlotte is present?
That's right. I've given you the instances.
Then I'd stay away from her.
That's what I've decided to do. At least for several months.
Mother and daughter will be back in Providence within a week.
I can't really understand any part of this, John. Can you?
Perhaps. Mrs. Marsden told you she'd killed the man. That may be an exaggeration. Whatever she did to him, his shade won't let her forget the wrong done to him.
We know that. Go on.
Charlotte is a beautiful and intelligent young woman. We also know that. You come along and love her deeply. Edmund Orme appears. And when he does, his presence makes you appear to be an imbecile. How could Charlotte take you seriously when, as you are about to propose, you glaze over and lose your wits?
She couldn't.
Very well. Maybe that's Edmund Orme's point. To punish Mrs. Marsden, Orme will never permit Charlotte to marry anyone. If that's true, Mrs. Marsden will continue to deteriorate.
I see that.
If you were a mother with a rich and beautiful daughter, can you imagine how tortured you would be if she never married?
But she can marry almost anyone she chooses, John.
That makes it worse. Don't you see? At the point that someone is about to pop the question, the specter appears to the man, and he goes to pieces.
That's utterly mad.
That's the best that I can do.
Forgive me.
Why don't you ask Mrs. Marsden if my theory holds water? She hasn't been very open with you. Except that you, too, have seen the specter. I'd nominate her for an asylum.
Oh, unfair all this is to me and to Charlotte. Assuming she returns my feelings.
And you don't know that, do you?
I feel it.
Well, let's pack up and head for the ferry. It's a fine, crisp day. And the ocean breeze may clear your mind.
I'm packed. I have a few minutes. I'll walk over to the Tompkins and confront Mrs. Marsden. I intend to know the full story about Edmund Orme, or I'll turn my back on both the mother and the daughter.
To answer your first question, yes. Others who have been in love with Charlotte may have seen him. But they have not loved her as you love her.
Did they speak to you about the specter?
Oh, no. No, but they turned away from us.
I won't do that, Mrs. Marsden.
Bless you for that, David.
It must have been agonizing for you.
And puzzling and hurtful to Charlotte. She told me that you were on the verge of proposing when you began to act very strangely.
Have I any hope with her? Any chance?
that you may have is what I long for, what I pray for.
Thank you.
I believe it will all pass if she only loves you.
It will all pass?
I mean, we shall be rid of him, that we will never see him again.
If Charlotte loves me, I don't care how often I see him.
You take it better than I could.
You said you killed him. I want the story, Mrs. Marston. I have a right to know.
I broke his heart and he took his life.
He loved you deeply.
We were to be married. The engagement had been arranged by my mother and older sister. Edmund Orme was a fine man. He loved me. At the last moment, I realized that I didn't love him.
You jilted him?
Yes. I fell in love with Major Marsden. And 5 years later, I married him.
5 years?
Oh, they were years of torment. I was responsible for the death of Edmund Orme. It was after my husband, the Major, died that I began to see him.
Go on.
Edmund Orme always appeared with Charlotte. It began 7 years ago. Sometimes weeks, and then months would go by before he'd materialize.
You're being made to pay for the suffering you inflicted on Edmund Orme.
And Charlotte?
My guess is that because you trifled with his affections, he expects your daughter might behave the same way. He watches her so that she might suffer if she should do an equal wrong. You should tell Charlotte.
I am too ashamed to...
You have no other recourse, Mrs. Marston. By shielding her, you're cutting her off from a natural life.
Charlotte has done no wrong.
She might. Now, that's the point that the specter makes. He'll disappear only when Charlotte is honestly in love with someone. Until then, she will be suspect. This is an ugly thing that hangs over the three of us. We have to remove it somehow.
I received your note, David. You have news?
Good news, I think. Read Mrs. Marsden's letter. It's brief and to the point.
Yesterday, I spoke to Charlotte about you, and tears came to her eyes. He was there, of course, but I didn't look at him, and I didn't get into a flutter. She loves you, David, I am certain. You and only you. I'm arranging a small party for the weekend, and you and your friend, Mr. Clements, are invited. There is no need to acknowledge this note. I will expect both of you, and I hope that you will pay the visit. Why me?
So that if I'm disappointed, I won't throw myself into Narragansett Bay.
Well, let's do it.
Thank you. You were right, you know.
About my theory? To a point. Your point about retributive justice is closer to the mark. Edmund Orme won't permit Charlotte to marry without love. If she does, she will be punished as her mother has been for all these years.
Well, I'll make the train arrangements.
I look forward to our adventure.
I look forward to seeing Charlotte, but I dread seeing him again. I'm afraid of that specter, John.
Because he's both jury and judge.
He holds the fate of three of us in his hands.
I'm so very glad the two of you could come.
You look wonderfully well, Mrs. Marsden.
What a splendid house you have. It's charming.
Thank you. I haven't told Charlotte that you were coming, but she'll be delighted, I know.
I'll drift in and say hello.
Well, Mrs. Marsden?
I brought up the subject a few days ago. We were alone, as we usually are in the daytime. I asked her about you, David.
The subject is painful to me, Mother.
If you'd rather not discuss it...
There's nothing to discuss. We said goodbye. He was a summer friend.
No more than that?
Are you disappointed in me, Mother?
Oh, no. No, concerned is the word I'd use. Since we came home, you've been moody, and that's not like you.
I have no direction. I just go through the motions of living.
And in your mind?
Memories, of course.
I almost died when he said you'd given him my hand. Well, that's such a silly expression.
Oh, I think so, too. It only means that I approved of him as being worthy of you.
He is that, I'm sure. And quite handsome.
He loves you, Charlotte.
He's never said so. I think he's about to, and he goes all funny.
How do you feel about him?
Oh, I don't want to talk about him anymore, Mother. I really don't.
I no longer have any doubts about her feelings toward me, Mrs. Marsden. I'll speak to her tonight.
He'll appear. You know that.
David.
My darling Charlotte.
You're what?
I've been in love with you since we first met, and now I know that you love me, and that is all that matters in the whole world. You do return my love, don't you?
Hush. Someone's watching us from the corner of the room. See him? The one in evening dress? Oh, I don't like the way he looks at me, David.
David, come quickly. It's Mrs. Marsden.
The doctor can't explain it.
I can. It was that man we saw last night. The one in the old-fashioned evening dress.
He caused Mother to collapse?
I won't explain now, my dear, but the figure we saw has been terrifying your mother for many years. He's been the cause of her sudden and mysterious seizures.
But why?
Without your mother's permission, I hesitate to tell you. Love me as I love you and all will be well.
Oh, you're being terribly mysterious, David.
I've been out of my mind with worry about her and about you.
Who is the man? Mother. Mother, who is the man in the strange evening dress?
So you saw him, Charlotte.
Last night, at the very moment you fainted away at the piano.
And just after you admitted to David that you loved him. You do. Don't you, Charlotte? It's all that I wish.
Yes, Mother. I could love no other.
Then I'm content. I am really very ill, you know. I have been for a long time.
But the doctor said...
Darling, it's nothing about which a doctor can do anything. Later, David will explain. Profit by what he tells you. And you will be safe.
David, I don't know what she's talking about.
It's about something that happened a very long time ago. It's a terrifying story of revenge, and it arises from the grave.
David! There he is! There's a man!
Edmund Orm, you devil!
David! Oh, David, it's gone. Oh, the man is gone. Oh, David, Inspector, how terrible. Hold me tight.
Mrs. Marsden. She's dead.
Mother.
Dead. And the spirit of Edmund Orm has been exorcised.
The story of an apparition, of a specter. A story of literal bedevilment. A happy ending was too much to be expected. The writer's point is that deception of feeling in a relationship is sinful. Mrs. Marsden freed her daughter at the cost of her own life. That is why I implied earlier, and you may know this yourself, that an unforgivable offense may haunt you throughout your life. I'll return shortly.
I'm Betsy Palmer speaking for CHEAR, C-H-E-A-R, Children's Hearing, Education, and Research. Loss of hearing affects everyone differently. Often the loss is not discovered at birth, and this lessens the chance for early detection. CHEAR can help such parents get good advice about what to do because many CHEAR members have gone through the experience themselves. CHEAR, founded in 1969, wants everyone to know that deafness is simply another serious medical problem, one that needs to be opened calmly discussed and studied and learned about and overcome. You can help CHEER win the fight against hearing impairment and deafness by giving your support. Can you hear me now? Many people can't. Today, now, support CHEER, C-H-E-A-R, a voice for the hearing impaired. Contact P.O. Box 362, Yonkers, New York, 10704. That's CHEER, Box 362, Yonkers, New York, 10704.
Punishment comes in many forms. You may be fined or imprisoned, even lose your life. Those are the punishments of the everyday world. And then there is the punishment of conscience. Beyond even that, we may consider punishment inflicted by an agency that is, by definition, unreal. Whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad. Mrs. Marsden was driven close to the edge by the specter of Edmund Orme and died to exorcise his spirit. Our cast included Lamont Johnson, Mary Jane Higby, Jada Rowland, and Gordon Gould. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I am perfectly cool and in command of myself.
Oh, look in the mirror. Look at your face, the face of madness.
I've never felt more rational in all my life.
Do you think so? Look and see how mistaken you are.
I know what you're trying to do.
What?
You're trying to distract my attention long enough so that you
And
can...
I know what you are trying to do. You have to believe, you're sane, that you're normal and in command of yourself. That's why you're afraid to look in the mirror.
I am not.
You're afraid to look at that wild-eyed mad woman. Now look, I dare you.
I am not afraid. Just move to the side. Move away. That's right. Now stand still and don't you try anything.
Look. Whose face is that? Look closely.
That's not...
No! Let go of the gun now! No! No! Let go of the gun and Alex!
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and ARM, Allergy Relief Medicine. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
If America's airline to the world has one mission, it's to provide international travel at prices people can afford. In 1948, Pan Am introduced the first tourist fare. Over the years, we constantly brought out innovations in fares and tours. In 1970, Pan Am was the first to fly the 747. It brought fares down even further. This year, we're offering fares that are a major breakthrough in low-cost air travel. To find out Pan Am's lowest fare to the place you'd like to go, and to learn the specific restrictions, availabilities, and special requirements that apply to such low fares, call your travel agent. You'll find it's a unique experience to purchase something that actually costs less than it used to.
Pan Am's low apex fare from Chicago to Warsaw is only $565 round trip. To save money on your next trip to Europe, call your travel agent now for reservations.
CBS News. President Carter says he's deeply gratified at Monday night's Senate action, which will allow the sale of warplanes to Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The 54-44 Senate vote means the sales of almost $5 billion worth of American jet fighters to all three countries can be made. The Israeli government said afterward it is very concerned about the planes going to the two Arab states. Senator Jacob Javits, Republican of New York, said the Israelis should not think the United States is abandoning its support.
I hope and pray that the Israelis don't feel that they've been cast loose and are on their own. as matters stand now, because the United States, after 30 years of a commitment which said to Israel, we will see that you are provided with the military material to assure your security and your survival. Now we've got a new proposition engendered by this package deal, which the Senate has just approved, which is that what we give Israel depends on what we give other Arab states, or whether they need it for their security or not.
This reaction to the vote was expressed by John Richardson, spokesman for the National Association of Arab Americans.
The Senate vote today acknowledges growing American ties to the Arab world, and we welcome it. NAAA, the National Association of Arab Americans, calls upon the administration to develop a Middle East arms policy that will link deliveries to all Middle East countries and will result in a reduction in total arms transfers to the region in the years to come.
A spokesman for the Egyptian embassy said, we are deeply gratified, and called the vote a turning point in U.S.-Arab relations. More news in a moment.
I'm going on a picnic.
That's nice.
With Blanche, my sweetheart. That's her over there.
And you want us to make up a picnic basket?
With special wine and special food, Mr.
Vino Bronco.
Hi, Mike McDonald.
Vino Bronco is the name of Lancer's white dinner wine.
Vino Bronco?
Yes, very crisp and refreshing. It's affordable and it goes perfect with any food.
Like caviar?
Vino Bronco is perfect with caviar.
Okay, give me 2 quarts.
Of what?
Of caviar.
It's $25 an ounce. How much do you want?
Right. Well, there'll be 2 of us at the picnic.
Uh-huh.
And Blanche eats like a bird.
Well, just give me an estimate.
How about 1/4 of an ounce?
Perhaps you'd enjoy the Vino Bronco with something a little less expensive.
You mean like this chicken?
This pheasant.
Blanche eats meatloaf. Isn't this meatloaf?
No.
She eats meatloaf by the gobs.
It's not meatloaf. It's pâté de foie gras.
Okay, I'll take the Lancer's Vino Bronco. And what do you have to eat for under $10?
This jar of mustard.
Perfect. Blanche eats mustard by the gobs.
I'll wrap it up.
Honey, wanna eat the mustard here or
you
what?
You can't eat the mustard.
Ah, the summertime. When everybody's fancy turns to love, and Lancer's Vino Bronco white dinner wine, imported by Hubline, Hartford, Connecticut.
President Carter has signed the Farm Bill into law, providing up to $700 million in new funds for wheat and cotton price supports. The Agriculture Department immediately raised the target price for wheat from $3 to $3.40 a bushel, but new lands would have to be set aside. In one wheat-growing state, Robert Rumsa of the Minnesota Farmers Union says the legislation did not come soon enough.
The problem is that it comes so late. Wheat farmers have their set-aside plans made. They've got their wheat planted in almost all cases I know of. And although the deadline has been extended to consider the wheat program, once the guy's made his plans and mapped out his farm, how he's going to plant it, it's pretty tough at this point for them to make a decision.
The Farm Bill also allowed higher price supports for some cotton. The Senate Monday night approved a compromise federal budget of $498.8 billion for fiscal 1979. It would allow for a sizable tax cut and result in slightly less spending than proposed by President Carter. The preliminary budget now goes to the House. Former First Lady Pat Nixon has been admitted to a hospital in Long Beach, California for treatment of a lung infection. Her condition is described as good. The Justice Department says it sees no need for Congress to require oil companies to give up their coal holdings, but the Antitrust Division recommends limits be placed on the amount any one company can control. There's been some sentiment in Congress to force oil companies to give up coal holdings. Now this.
Listen here, right here, for some of the most informative and interesting listening you'll find anywhere. Listening that's really worth your time. For instance, Monday through Friday, Mike Wallace piques your interest with lively and candid comments from active people on Mike Wallace at Large. You'll meet authors, actors, and attorneys, pianists, painters, and politicians, people from all walks of life with challenging views and observations. If you enjoy meeting people, you'll enjoy Mike Wallace at Large. And for the same reason, you'll enjoy What's Happening Monday through Saturday. Each day, Stephanie Shelton covers a story of particular interest to women and calls on a person involved to discuss and explain the issue. The topic may be anything from the use of cosmetics to the success of women executives in business. But every day, you'll meet an interesting person with an interesting point of view. What's Happening with Stephanie Shelton and Mike Wallace at Large. Two more good reasons to listen here regularly on most of these CBS Radio Network stations.
In order to make its ratings more realistic, the Environmental Protection Agency says starting with the 1979 models, it will issue only one mileage figure per car. It will drop the combined city highway figure and use only the city mileage figure, which is always lower. Many motorists have complained that the combined ratings are unrealistically high. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
Here, 78 on 78. News Radio 78, WBBM, Chicago.
Good evening, everyone. This is Alan Bickley on News Radio 78 in Chicago.